Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love, on a lovely fall day.
It's a beautiful fall day in the Queen City, Sherry.
It is. And I do have to say, so we're in our podcast studio and the door is shut. But today is very bustling in the newsroom because we're doing two things today. Planning a newspaper, that's something we do every day, and preparing to be in the Blink Parade.
Yes.
So there's a lot going on with that. That's a big task. You have to be all lighted up and everything. I'm very excited. So look for the Inquirer and the Blink Parade. But that is the segue to today's guest.
Our very special guest, second time appearing on the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
Because it's his second Blink.
Right.
The executive director of Blink, Justin Brookhart, is going to join us today.
That's going to be, and I have many questions, as a Blink enthusiast.
I mean, there has just been a barrage of news and like kind of keeping up. I've been taking notes as we go, like the reporter that I am, of like, oh, that's interesting and that's interesting, before I put together like a full plan. But there has just been a lot of how this is all coming together, coming out. We're a media partner too, so we get all this in our inbox.
That's right. So yeah, it'll be great to talk to Justin, but it's been busy for other reasons too, because it has just been a crazy cycle of news here.
I wouldn't have it any other way, Burl.
But the big news, one of the big stories that I think we should talk about is, to the surprise of many, Red's skeptics. They probably had one of the biggest off-season, well, it's not off-season, it's off-season for us, obviously, because we're not in the playoffs.
Unfortunately, why this happened.
Unfortunately, the Reds off-season started earlier than many of us wanted. But big news in the surprise hiring of Terry Francona as the next manager of the Cincinnati Reds.
It came very quickly. It came late at night. And it came out of the blue.
It did come out of the blue.
Tell me about Terry. I know a little bit about him.
So most recently, he was the manager of the Cleveland Indians. Mm-hmm. He took them to the World Series and was one game away from winning a World Series with Cleveland. But he's a two-time World Series manager with the Boston Red Sox. He stepped away from baseball for a year for some health reasons, which he dealt with. He looks great and was ready to get back in. And he is a longtime friend of Marty Brenneman, the former voice of the Reds, Hall of Fame broadcaster. And Marty was the one who sort of got the conversations started. Like, you know, elbow nudge, hey, you guys should talk to Terry Francona. And, you know, we've had some great reporting on it. Terry has done some press conferences now, and has over and over again talked about how it seemed like a great fit. And if you don't think the Reds wanted him, this was not a situation where Terry flew in for the interview.
They flew to him. Bob Castellini went to him.
Even like after Nick Kroll met with him, I believe in Tucson where he lives, the next day, Bob had to cancel, you know, the owner of the Reds, Bob Castellini, canceled plans and flew. And it was so funny listening to Terry talk. Yeah. Next day, Bob Castellini sit in my house. And that meant the world to me that they and he just feels like it's going to be a great fit. It feels like his approach to managing a baseball team is what this team has needed for a long time. They've got the young talent. They need some discipline. They need some accountability. All of those things are in the
table. Wait, are we talking about the Reds or the Bengals? We're on the Reds.
We are on the Reds. Last week when this news was breaking, we were at the Hats Off Luncheon together, the fundraiser for the Cincinnati Parks Foundation. It's right along the riverfront. It's a beautiful soiree. Lots of who's who of Cincinnati, at this event. We were one of the presenting sponsors. It's a group we support, the Park Foundation, because who doesn't need a good park in their life, right? But anyway, I bumped into Susie Castellini.
As she was there.
And, Susie is a passionate reader and subscriber of the Enquirer. I've gotten to know her over the years because If she has praise, she sends it my way. If she has complaints, she's not afraid to give me
her feedback. That's my favorite kind of person.
Exactly.
Good.
Her biggest complaint with the Enquirer is she does not like the Sudoku puzzle that we run now. She wants us to switch that up. But she ran to me and said, I have not seen Bob this excited in a long time. And I thought that was the sweetest thing to say.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And a telling fact.
Yes.
A telling fact.
So, yes, there's all of a sudden this renewed, rekindled hope for baseball fans. And it couldn't come at a better time as the Bengals are now 1-4. I'm already counting the days until catchers and pitchers report.
You guys, the comment sections are not to be missed on the Bengals.
Oh, my goodness. It's not too late. It's not too late.
So this was very exciting news from the Reds. My favorite fact, our baseball reporter, Gordon Whitmire, did an amazing story of kind of how it all came together, kind of like a TikTok. And at one point, the new manager offered to do jumping jacks to prove how in shape he is.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, wait, real quick. Jumping jacks are hard. If you're not in shape, you can't do them. And so that was like, that's a really telling fact. But it was a little fact, but a fun fact in that story.
And you know, his personality. I followed him as the manager of the Indians, the other Major League Baseball team in Ohio.
The Guardians.
Yes.
I know, Burl. Because I grew up in Northern Ohio. I know.
Yeah, the Guardians. But he is so down to earth, self-deprecating. He was cracking me up in his press conference when they gave him the jersey. He talked about his time as a Cincinnati Reds player. One season with the Reds, Pete Rose was the manager, and he said, I'm paraphrasing now. He was, referencing Pete's passing, and he said he had, the utmost respect for Pete. He revered him. He felt he was a great manager. He said his only complaint with Pete's management was that he played him too much. This is Terry Francona saying, he played me too much because, I remember he was saying, coming in as a pinch hitter and getting a quick out. I was really good at that. So, I mean, just, doesn't take himself too seriously, but man,
That's a telling fact about Pete because everything we've read about him, a lot of his quotes, the hustle, we play 7 days a week, we play hard, we care. And like, I'm sure he meant that for his players too.
Absolutely.
Like there's no sitting in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. And Pete Rose is like, we work all day, every day during the season.
Well, and they share the respect for the game, how it should be played. I mean, even little things like, getting caught stealing, taking a too big of a lead, situations when you shouldn't be running, situations when you should be running and all of that stuff. Terry respects the game, and I think that's going to go a long way in what he does with the organization. So
the one last thing I'll say is this seems to be the lingering question is like, well, now the Reds have to just, get some good players. That's true, but it's hard to imagine that these negotiations went like Terry saying, whatever you guys want to do will be fine. There seems to probably be some promises made behind the scenes, I'm guessing, for him to come out of retirement and do this. I'm very hopeful.
They have already replaced the hitting staff.
Hitting
coaching staff. I mean, he's not letting any dust settle.
It seems like a given.
I think the big factor is, well, the team has the talent. Will they be healthy? Matt McClain is playing winter ball and apparently is swinging the bat pretty well. It'd be great to have him back. The Reds at the end of the season looked nothing like the opening day roster just because of all the injuries. Four of the five starting pitchers, in the rotation on opening day were injured by the end of the season on the IL. So there's always things, but I think Reds fans should be feeling pretty good about what happened down there at Great American Ballpark this week.
Opening day. I don't have the timeline, but it's soon, it seems like.
All right. Well, should we talk to Justin?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Yes. special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. We're in the countdown to blink, and there's only one guest that you could have during that time, and that is the executive director of Blink, Justin Brookhart. Welcome.
Thanks so much. Again. It's great to be back.
Again. I feel like you were just here, but it's been 2 years.
2 years goes by really fast when you're planning our region's largest event. Yeah, thrilled to be here.
I was actually going to ask you about that. Like, obviously, you're always working on Blink. You've been working on it since the one 2 years ago ended. But it's got to have, like, a cycle. Are you at the point now where there's, like, literally nothing left you can possibly do?
He came in on the phone, but okay.
it's a funny question. It does, you know, Blink is on a two-year, you know, programming cycle. So, like, you know, what the work looks like, you know, 18 months out is definitely different than what it looks like, you know, 18 days out. But we're getting to the point where, like, I'm becoming more and more useless on this project, you know, like,
It takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, I mean, just this week, we had our production crews roll in. So we load all of our gear into Great American Ballpark. That's our production headquarters. And then we start deploying gear out into the city. Artists are in town painting murals, and folks are out there doing all the work. And so what lives in our head and lives in spreadsheets and in meetings now actually gets deployed into the city. And so there's not too much I can do to mess things up or make it better at this point, I hope. Yeah,
it truly is. It's here. I don't think I realized that Great American Ballpark is sort of like your base for the event.
We're fortunate that the Reds are able to offer that to us. You know, we need a lot of space to lay out our gear and prep things. It's a great central location that has loading docks and 24-hour security, and they're fortunate enough to let us borrow that for a couple days, and that's where our team is prepping all the gear right now.
I mean, not to be ever the hopeful fan, but you better start thinking in 2 years you're not going to be able to do that, because we'll be in the playoffs and going to the World Series.
Great problem.
Some big Reds news this week.
That's fantastic. Yeah, well, that would be, you're right, that would be a good problem to have.
Yeah, we'll figure out a place to stash projectors if we need to. We'll be happy to have the team in that World Series. Yeah.
So we're thrilled. We're one of your official media partners. We'll talk about this later, but if you're wondering where Blink is, we'll have the map in the Sunday Inquirer and online and all of that stuff. It is quite the footprint you have now compared to, what, 2017? Baby Blink was born.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, kind of the evolution, you know, we're now going to what is our, you know, fourth edition of Blink. So we've only produced this event three times before. You know, the things that we think about is, you know, where are fun spaces to activate? What's beautiful buildings, architecture? What are, you know, areas that we want to bring people to and kind of shine a new light on, literally? And for us, that meant kind of expanding the footprint a little bit into a new zone this year. We're expanding into Newport, which is really fun for us. You know, we have a dedicated, you know, audience of folks that, you know, kind of come into the urban core of Cincinnati, but we also love the idea of activating new spaces and offering just different levels of experiences, you know, and expanding into Newport in particular. We imagine that there might be families that, like, are used to going there on Friday and Saturday nights and, you know, might want to come check it out, kind of different for this weekend. And so, you know, we thought about expanding there. The rest of the footprint is really kind of consolidated from what we did in 2022. So we're kind of sticking to a little bit tighter of a footprint. We got some good feedback from folks in 2022 that said, like, hey, we just want a little bit more density, a little bit more immersion in the artwork. And so for us, the public art and placemaking side of it is a really fun aspect to this event, and figuring out how human behavior will kind of flow and people will enjoy the different installations is something we spend a lot of time discussing.
What's the northernmost?
Yeah, so the Findlay Market literally is Findlay the most Market, like, northern spot. So we went a little bit further than that in 2022. We went up to the Hanna Playground area and kind of had an activation there. So we've shortened that footprint a little bit. There are some murals that are a little bit north of Findlay, but for the nighttime, like, lighted up aspect of the event, there's a giant installation called Future Findlay, which is a huge project by a local artist named Dan Shields. And he's essentially going to yard bomb an entire canopy over the southern side of the market house. So you'll see, if you went to Blink in 2022, you'll be familiar with Dan's work. He had this kind of glowy string installation that you could throw and interact with.
Yeah.
And that was one of our most popular installations. He's doing a different version, less interactive, but still this giant kind of canopy that you'll be able to walk under throughout the entire, like, southern facade of the market. So it's one of our bigger installations as well.
And then the southernmost point, somewhere in Newport?
Yeah, basically, I'd say, like, Newport, or, you know, I'd say Hotel Covington, probably on our Covington footprint, is probably the most southern point we have there. But we love, you know, activating our different spaces and just, again, imagining how people are going to kind of behave and engage throughout the weekend.
anything like the mural with the, my favorite thing the last time was the toy mural.
Yes.
And it's coming to life. Is there anything like that this time?
Yeah, there's a couple projects like that. One, the Toy Heritage mural was easily one of the most popular installations in 2022. So I'm glad to hear you like that one. That same artist is actually going to return some new animations to that same mural. So similar, you know, idea of taking 3D models of all those original Kenner toys and bringing them to life, kind of Toy Story-esque. So you can return to that mural this year and see brand new animations, which is really cool.
Oh.
But, you know, people love to see the murals come to life, particularly ones that are, you know, well-known and famous, like that Toy Heritage mural. Another one we're bringing to life this year is the Neil Armstrong mural at Walnut and 6th Street, right by the Contemporary Arts Center and by Fountain Square. If you ever passed by that mural, super bright, vibrant, colorful, and kind of celebrates the history and legacy of Neil Armstrong and obviously his connection to Cincinnati. And we're working with a local artist to animate that one and kind of tell the story of the moon landing in a really fun way. It's a can't miss.
That's going to be a big deal, yeah.
There was a lot of buzz about the drone show last year. What can we expect with this year's
drone show? It was a really fun addition for us in 2022. It's something that, you know, Blink organizers had been planning for a while. They wanted to do a drone show, but it was important for us in adding it in 2022. So we wanted to make sure like as many people as possible could see the drone show. We have so many Blink attendees and we wanted to make sure it wasn't just a one night experience that you could see. So we had to find a vendor that could do, you know, a large scale drone show, but do two shows all 4 nights of the event. And so that's what we're returning again this year, but we're adding even more drones. So we have about 500 drones that are going to be flying over the Ohio River, just west of the Roebling Bridge. They'll launch from the Covington Landing Amphitheater area, but will be visible from both the Covington and Cincinnati side of things. So you can go down to Smale Park and see it. You can check it out over in that Covington area. But again, those hours are 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock for all 4 nights of the event. And it'll kind of coincide with our parade, which will be pushing off on Thursday night around 8 o'clock as well. So we're kind of have a big grand opening ceremony. We definitely took some inspiration from the Olympics and wanting to have kind of both a parade and a drone show kind of coinciding at once.
Well, that'll be fantastic. Yes. I mean, if you're down here, you won't know where to look.
There's plenty to see, which we love. So we definitely want to make sure people, you know, take time, take a look at that map in your Enquirer this Sunday, plan your routes. We have sort of suggested paths in our map this year, which we're kind of telling people in each zone, here's about a mile and a half loop that you can do to really walk around and see the most installations possible. We find that Blink is definitely a choose your own adventure and highly discoverable event, but people like a little bit of curation as well. So we're kind of recommending a few paths for people. Just if you're wanting to maybe have a nice leisurely night, I'd recommend looking at one of those paths. If you want to see a little bit more, maybe doing two paths a night is probably about the right speed for most folks.
It's kind of like going to Disneyland or Disney World. You can't possibly do it all in one day.
And now it's true.
And some of the best advice I've heard from your team at the Chamber is, yes, it is possible if you wanted to be, you know, that check the box person and see everything to, you know, basically sprint around and try to take it all in. But the I think the best advice, having been to Blink too, is let the night unfold. You know, don't feel like you have to see everything, but sort of just kind of experience it. And if it's cool, just linger a little bit and don't worry about what you didn't see. Savor what you are, you know, savor the moment. Now, I would have to coach myself to do that because I'm sort of type A and you know,
want to check all those boxes, right, and say you saw the things.
You know, I suffer from FOMO and all of that stuff. Yeah. But I think that's I think that's interesting that, you know, the feedback you've gotten over the years, you're sort of trying to give people that option. Okay, if you insist on seeing everything, here's a route.
Yeah.
Here's a recommended route. If not, hang out. You know, hang out in Newport for the night.
Totally.
You know, soak it in.
I think you described it well. I mean, because we're such a large public event and accessible for so many people kind of come at us at different levels, right? You have those super users that do want to just see everything, but then you have those folks that just maybe want to dip in, check something out. But I tend to recommend to my friends and people that ask me how to experience Blink best is exactly what you described. Pick one thing you really want to see, right? So, you know, start at Music Hall if you want to check out, you know, our return of projection mapping there. Start at the drone show and then just kind of go with the flow. There is sort of a natural momentum when you get on the streets of Blink, and I find that the crowds and audiences sort of propel you forward and just discover things. You know, if you want to try to see everything, you definitely can, but I think it's best just to kind of, you know, take it all in. You know, the artists spend a lot of time working on this, you know, work, and so we love it when people can kind of plant their feet for a moment, sit in the installation, and really view things for a while.
I'm really excited. So I am a type A person, but I'm doing it in the four pieces. and I'm going to try not to stress out.
You should share.
I really, because I don't want to rush.
You should share that. You should share Sherry's blink.
I will do that.
I love this.
The Sherry blink experience. Yeah.
I will do this. And like,
that might be a fun thing for us to do is like, how do you blink?
Also, I think my number one tip is a boring tip. But
comfortable shoes.
Definitely. But 2 years ago, I was not feeling great and is having some trouble walking. So I did use a guest card. They were amazing. I rented one and it was an incredible experience. But you cannot drive through Blink. It is impossible. There's just people in the streets. It was a lot. Mm-hmm. And so for some, if you have some issues, then by all means, do try and do that. But Blink is a walking event. And that's why do breaking it up is very important. And I recommend parking on the edges of the city. Because like the main lots you might park in for the different things down by the stadiums or whatever, there's a lot of parking. But the closer to the edges of the city, the better. Because then you can kind of ring around the city. So that's my kind of boring
Sherry's
tip.
Pro tip.
That's I like my, it. Yeah.
So...
And Metro, we should mention.
Oh, please.
Our friends over at Metro, free buses from the park and rides.
That's right.
And so that is a very good way to get downtown of being able to be dropped off at installations.
That's right. Yeah. Both Metro and Tank in Northern Kentucky are offering free rides throughout Blink Weekend. So from, I believe, the hours of 6 to 11, all 4 nights of the event. And then there are designated park and ride options where you can park, leave your vehicle. I believe those are at Cincinnati State and Crossroads Church over in Norwood. And I believe Tank is running them at NKU's campus. So you can park there and get dropped off right in the middle of the Blink footprint and not have to worry about any of those parkings.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That is the way to do it. So what does the director of Blink do on Blink night?
Oh,
what
that's is, a great question. Yeah.
I'm very curious.
Yeah. It's a little bit of, you know, going around and thanking people that make the event happen, right? So that's, you know, sometimes our sponsors and supporters. That's sometimes the artists that are out there literally creating the work that people are enjoying. And a little bit, when I can, trying to actually, like, experience the event because, you know, we spend 2 years planning this and, like, I don't always get to have the normal attendee experience where I'm standing on a street corner with, you know, folks and just, you know, kind of taking it all in. So I'm trying to make more time for that this year. At the same time, like, you know, things come up. There are, you know, production realities and little logistics and little things that we have to run around and like help solve for. But usually if a projector is going down or installation's not working, I am not the one fixing it. That would be a problem for everyone if I'm needed to. So it's usually, yeah, it's doing those things. It's thanking people. It's helping to just like make sure folks are having a good experience. Typically responding to a lot of text messages from people telling me like, this looks awesome, or hey, where can I come and see this? And so for me, it goes by really fast. I'm trying to like take the time
and
enjoy
sleep?
It. You know, not much, you know, around this time, if I'm honest, you know, but like we're like, you know, all eyes on the ball right now. And so, you know, sleep will come in November. My wife and I are planning a lovely trip and we're looking forward to that.
That's how we feel about the election around here.
Yes.
Right.
After the election will come.
Just get on the other side of it, right? You know,
hopefully the election will be over in a reasonable amount
yes,
of time.
Girl. Yes,
girl. There you go.
So this is your second Blink at the helm.
Yeah.
What were some of your mental notes as you walked around last year that you said, okay, we need to address this, or this is something that's really good. We need to do more of this. Did you have like a short, like, you know,
there are a couple of things that really, you know, took note that have, you know, been integrated into this year's festival. I'd say one of the things is all the projection installations in years past that had like sound and an audio component, people just responded to more. So not all of them did, though. I'd say only about 50% of our projection installations in 2022 actually had like an audio experience as a part of it. Most of them were just like visuals. This year, all of the projection installations have an audio component to it, which we think is great. I think we took some lessons by what we saw here from Blink, but myself and some of the other Blink team members have gotten to travel and attend other lighted art festivals, both here in the US and internationally. And the, you know, installations that we responded best to both had incredible visuals, but also had great soundscapes or had integrated music and scores to it. And so that's something that's like going to feel a little new and different. Also just the overall integration of music across the festival. We're trying to figure out how we can like keep the street energy up. So like think less like dedicated music stages than we've had in years past, more like roaming musicians and more like the opportunities for folks to just like keep that energy up on the street, because as Sherry mentioned, like this is a highly pedestrianized event. People walk around. We want people to like keep that energy up, like keep that like fun spirit. So we have some things that are sort of like surprise and delights and more like roaming opportunities for people to like engage on the streets.
Where were some of the places you visited to do fact-finding.
Yeah,
inspiration.
Yeah, it's a really fortunate part of this job that we get to travel and check out like amazing like other like, you know, festivals. I was fortunate to attend a couple last year that were really informative for like different reasons. One is an event called Vivid Sydney, which is sort of the largest running kind of lighted art event at this scale, taking place in Sydney, Australia. They do their event every year, and I believe it's been going on for about 13, 14 years. So they're really seasoned pros at this. Their event runs for 2 weekends. It's really robust button-up operation. And so for me, visiting that event was just great to see from like a production standpoint, from like a operations, their team is, you know, massive and, you know, well-funded and well-supported. And so some of that was just kind of thinking about how do we benchmark ourselves against like a world-class event like this. And then for more like a creative inspiration trip, myself and some of the Blink team went to an event that's much smaller in Prague called Signal Festival. I'd say that's probably like, you know, less than a third of the size of what Blink is. Obviously, it takes place in a beautiful city like Prague. But the art there was just really inspiring. That's where we got a lot of lessons from how to, you know, really activate different spaces and how to think about some of those audio experiences that I described. But, you know, there are, you know, great light art festivals all over the world, but there aren't many here in the United States that are at this quality and scale that we produce Blink at. I can say definitively that there really isn't anyone that produces as many installations or as large of an event, and certainly not as large of an attendance as us. And really proud of that, to be the US's like premier destination for this type of artwork. And that's really borne out a little bit in our popularity in the last 2 years, and our kind of reputation on the national level has really grown. And we saw that most explicitly in our call for artists this year. So we do a public call where we invite artists from both the Cincinnati region and all over the world to kind of submit proposals and ideas for what they want to bring to the streets of Cincinnati. And from a number standpoint, the call that we did in 2022 had about 250 responses. We had over 950 this year. So just a massive amount of people kind of saying we want to come and exhibit work.
That is massive. Yeah. 900 people interested in coming to Blink, and you have to choose how many.
Yeah, so we have about, you know, 85 signature installations, yeah, but literally, you know, dozens of artists involved in making that happen. But it's right. You're right. It's a hard job to think about how do you curate? What do we want to see? What do we think attendees want to see? So we brought more people in to help with that work this year. We had a curatorial advisory committee made up of local artists and curators to kind of comb through those submissions, sort of make a short list. And then we figured out which pieces we wanted to see come October.
So one of my favorite things, like we experienced this for the 4 days that we have it. But is the residuals of the art that stays with us over time, like some of these murals. I'm so excited about G. Horton's 3 murals, but they'll live with us forever. And like, we'll see them just as part of our daily lives.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. You know, the mural program is certainly something that's like, you know, baked into the identity of Blink, you know, in addition to kind of being this, you know, 4-day fleeting, you know, experience. We love that we have this lasting legacy and that we've had over 45 permanent murals that have been added to the public art scene here in Cincinnati. Our mural program is really kind of concentrated in and around the Findlay Market area. That's very intentional for us. There's obviously great murals and public art throughout the city from friends that, you know, and partners like Artwork and Black Art Speaks and other groups, but we really concentrate our program in and around there. And we created a world-class catalog of public art. This year, we're adding about 16 new murals, including the one that you mentioned. It's a mural series by G. Horton, who's a great friend and local visual artist. He came to us with this idea of doing a series of murals, which is the first time we've ever done one artist being assigned multiple walls. But G has this great coming-of-age series that he's been working on for a few years, which premiered at the West End Gallery a couple years ago. He came to us over a year and go and said like, hey, I really want to do a sequence of murals that people will see in succession, but I need to find 3 walls. We need to figure out how we can execute this. Oh, by the way, I'm actually not a mural artist, so let's figure out who's also going to paint these for us. And so lots of fun things for us to figure out. And 2 of those murals are now complete on Vine Street. The 3rd one will be completed in about a week, and they're all on the eastern side of Vine Street, kind of in succession. So if you're like me, a Clifton resident, and you come down into downtown, you'll see those sort of in sequence, but you'll be able to view those, including one which will be illuminated with projection. I'm here at Blink next week.
Adding that to my list.
Yes, it's a good one. Definitely stop and check out G's work.
So then after Blink, then you just have 2 years off. Is that how that works?
That's right. It's just traveling and partying, and plans in the work.
Just sort of like teachers have the whole summer
off.
Nothing going on. No.
But no, I mean,
how
like,
big is your team?
I mean, it's a great question because, you know, like core team that works full time on Blink, it's I'm a full time person. And then we just recently, a couple months ago, hired our second full time person. Beyond that,
compared to like Sydney, which probably has.
Yeah. I mean, I'm at the Sydney marketing team and that was 16 full time people that just market the event.
Just the markers,
you know, just from an understanding. But like, that's to say, those are people that work full time all the time. We have folks that are constantly working on the event. We work with a great partner group. So I'm employed at the Cincinnati Regional Chamber. We have a great group of event operations teams over there that, you know, produce things like Oktoberfest, Taste of Cincinnati, Asian Food Fest, all of our other big signature public events. So I work with, you know, Chelsea York, who leads that department, and a few other folks at the chamber, and then our internal marketing team and everything. But we have a various partner groups, the team at Agar, who's one of our founding partners, the team at Cincy Nice, the team at Ish, and then a whole lot of, you know, contractors and other producers that kind of come online throughout the process. So it's an interesting event in the sense that, like, it's a pretty small core team that works on it for, you know, most of the 2-year process. And then more people kind of come online as we get a little bit closer. You know, starting this week is when all of our production crews roll into town. We start hiring our local 5 union labor to come out and do all of our rigging and, you know, stagehand work. And so a lot of people join the collaboration in this, like, last 2 weeks sprint.
Will we get like sneak previews like on Wednesday night, like everyone's kind of testing things out?
Yeah, like, that's I can tell that's like a veteran Cincinnati question. Because like people I think have learned that like Wednesday night is like the test night. You can start walking around the city and start kind of seeing some of the projections getting dialed in and tested. We do a lot of our teching with artists on like Tuesday and Wednesday nights, and so if you happen to be walking around and you see some projectors getting fired on, you can usually check out the artwork a little early. So that's a good tip for
you.
Your
have
listeners
to do it at night.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, you know, late at night is when we typically start doing things, so you'll see that happening kind of early, like Wednesday night. It's kind of like a good sneak preview night, I think, for locals. And I know there are some fun events that are not formal Blink events, but kind of kick off the tradition on Wednesday night. They do a big Blink bike ride that starts at Findlay Market. I believe there's a 5K run that's associated this year too. So I love that people are kind of building these like traditions and, you know, side events on top of, you know, the big spectacle that we put on.
I have to say, you look incredibly relaxed for someone who is a week away from showtime, right? What's your secret?
Oh gosh, I wish there was a secret. Just a belief in the team. And, you know, I'll say that, you know, compared to 2 years ago at this time, I'm feeling a little bit better. I know what the work looks like. I know sort of what the next 8 days really look like for us. But it's just a belief in the team and, you know, the folks that are creating this work, and just trying to keep everyone on track is the goal. So we solve problems one at a time and move on to the next one. There's no time to dissect why are there problems. It's just, let's figure it out. And right. Move on to the next thing. Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, what didn't we ask you that people should know about the festival this year, if anything? Because I know we are thorough in our interrogation of you, but, you know.
There's an after party.
Yeah, this is Blink's first after party. I'm glad you mentioned this.
Uh-huh. Of course you would know about the after party, Sherry.
Yeah, there's always like, you know, things that happen after the lights turn off at 11 o'clock, but we've never done anything formally. Typically, we're just trying to get everyone back home and in bed and rested for the next day. But we decided we wanted to create like an extra celebration on Saturday night at Blink this year. So we're working with the folks over at Promo West and the Megacorp Pavilion over in Newport to have kind of our first official after party. So this is a ticketed experience that you can purchase tickets to, and we're going to have kind of both a light show and DJ experience headlined by Austin Mills, a great internationally renowned DJ, is going to be coming in with a few other local DJs supporting it. But it's also a chance for us to invite the artists to come celebrate them, and you can join us in that and get your tickets at blinkcincinnati.com.
And start planning your outfit.
Of course,
do you know
of course,
how many
Sherry.
Lighted outfits there are online? This is a whole subset of fashion.
There really is a lot.
I've seen
a lot of like faux coats that also light up this year is like a trend that I'm seeing.
Oh no, mine came in a giant box, and Alex was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Don't worry, it's
your
nothing.
Poor husband."
And it was this huge, and he's like,
"So you are going to the after party, Sherry, with like, a lighted coat or
yes.
something?"
I love the Blink fashion. I think it's great that people like think about this as a weekend to like dress a little
you.
Different.
It's
you
like
know?
Elton John wherever you look. Have you got your lighted suit picked out for the party? I have to like give a visual description now for our listeners. Justin is wearing a Blink ball cap.
Correct.
A sweater like I like to wear sometimes, very nondescript. There might be a little hole on the sleeve.
There definitely is in this one.
Yeah. Are you going to ramp up for the party and we're going to see a new side of Justin?
You will typically see me in like Blink merchandise, which we have a Blink retail store that you can purchase from. I got to be on brand. I'm pretty a little bit more low key as you just described. You know, you'll see me in a Blink ball cap typically, like maybe some like brightly colored shoes. But for the most part, I'm trying to blend in with the crowd, not stand out too much.
Rumor has it that Brandon Call has a lighted outfit.
I can confirm he might have a couple lighted outfits.
Not surprised there. All right. Well, Justin, you got to be one of the most busiest people in the city right now, not involved in politics. thank you for your time with us. Again, so many places to get your information on Blink, but we're so happy to be one of the official providers of the Blink map.
Yes.
Both online and in old school.
And watch for us in the parade.
I was going to say, your collaborators this year, too. I believe your team is marching in our parade on Thursday night.
Oh, yeah. We're all in on Blink here, man. I got to tell you.
We love it.
All right. Well, thank you again, Justin.
No, thank you all so much.
All right. Well, I was already excited about Blink, and I'm even more excited now. Fun fact about me.
What's your fun fact, Sherry?
I interviewed Neil Armstrong. And that was a very hard thing to do.
The pride of Wapakoneta.
I was a very brand new reporter at the Inquirer, and I didn't know where I was going. The Columbia shuttle had exploded, and he was, you know, an aeroscientist at the University of Cincinnati, and the editor, Rick Green, was like, go interview him, which I'm like, okay.
Sure.
Not knowing that he is notoriously reclusive and everything. And I have to say, I got lost like 50 times. He lived in Indian Hill. Imagine, I'm kind of new here trying to navigate Indian Hill without GPS.
Right.
It was like, that long
there's
ago.
There's barely any street signs.
I was like, I'm going to get fired. If I don't find him in an interview, I'm going to get fired. That's literally what was running through my head. And he was so lovely. He kind of let me in his foyer. He talked to me for 10 minutes and I had an interview with him. And it was just really an incredible experience. I was really overwhelmed to be in the presence of Neil Armstrong. I feel like I did do a good job of the interview and I came back. I missed deadline. But it did run the next day.
That's good. That is good.
That's my fun fact. I can't wait to see the installation. I do love that mural as a result. I think about it every time I see the mural.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to see at Blink this year. And I'm going to try to take my own advice and not be running around, just like enjoy where I am. But yes, I'm going to make myself a little checklist. I'm going to use the Inquirer's map. It'll be fine.
I know, which you've probably already seen and I haven't.
I have.
Okay.
funny story. We gave them the dimensions for the map, and it's a horizontal space. And they actually first asked if they could do the map vertically.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, maybe we could do that if people like turn the paper sideways. But, you know, like when you open up a newspaper, I know we're going old school here. Now, on our app, the digital version of it would be very cool. You can download the Cincinnati.com app and get access to the Blink map that way. They're not doing their own app this year, so we're happy to partner with them on that. It'll be available mobile web, but yes, we're all in on Blink here, Sherry.
I know this.
We are all
in. The newsroom reflects this.
That's right. All right. Well, you had a Cincinnati moment, didn't you?
I did.
As usual.
I kind of want to tout. I was on a true crime program. The funny thing about me is I covered police for a very long time in courts. Then I kind of moved into government reporting. Everyone's welcome. we need tough watchdog reporters. I did actually love covering crime, though. And I kind of got out of covering crime as true crime was making its like explosion into everything.
Great timing on your part.
And some of my friends are like, why don't you do this now? Like, there's just so much there.
Right.
But Investigation ID reached out to me and they were doing a series and a crime that I had covered back in 2004, the very sad death of Chris Amos, a young man who was killed in Over the Rhine. And they wanted to feature what had happened to him on an episode of True Crime. And they're like, can you comment? And I was like, no. I was like, you know, that was a long time ago. And I felt kind of awkward about doing that. And it was Amber Hunt, the host of Accused that we used to do here, and just really just loves true crime and is so good at covering crime, is like, you need to do this. It's a good experience. And she's like, I think that you'll learn some things. And she was totally right. I worked with them. So the end result is there was a series. It's called The Real Murders of Elm Street. And all over the country, each episode is a homicide that happened on an Elm Street, as did ours. On Riverfest night, it was a terrible, terrible killing. The episode is called Cruel Intentions. And everyone is welcome. They left a lot of the terrible, terrible details of the death of how Chris died. The title suggested, but they left a lot of those details on the cutting room floor. That's how bad it was. It was just really an awful crime. And the highlight of it, honestly, is the police had nothing to go on. This is like after the riots. There was a lot of mistrust of the police. And the Cincinnati police officers, and I remember this, were so dogged in finding the person who did this. They went suspect. They're like, this person probably did it. I'm like, no, he didn't. Then they're like, no, I think this person did it. And they just kept going until they found the people who did it. It ended up being the big connection was that something on the victim's body they used to make an order at La Rosa's. And you know what happened? This is so Cincinnati. You know what happens when you call La Rosa's?
No,
you have to give pizza. A name and an address.
Yeah.
And so that led them to the real killers. And so that's how it ended up really getting solved. But anyway,
I'm going to have to listen. I was not, you know,
I didn't talk about it.
I was not at the Enquirer when this all went down.
But I didn't talk about it that much because I wanted to see if it was going to be embarrassing before I talked about it. So I watched it first. It is streaming on HBO Max.
Okay.
And then it's on Investigation ID and they kind of replay things. And so my whole last week and a half have been like, hey, I think I saw you on TV.
That's amazing. So let's promote this properly. The podcast is named
Real Murders of Elm Street.
Real Murders of Elm Street. The episode is
Cruel Intentions.
Cruel Intentions. And you can watch it on HBO Max.
And Investigation ID.
All right. Well,
so that was a fun little
I'm going to check it out just to see how you are as a podcast guest versus a podcast host.
That was much more serious because it was a very serious thing.
Yeah, it is true crime. All right. Well, we're at the end of the podcast, Sherry. Should we wrap it up?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. And Go-Kart Mozart was checking out the weather chart to see if it was safe outside.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer for new subscribers. And little Early Pearly came in by his curly whirly and asked me if I needed a ride.
Thanks again. See you next week.